If you looked at the top of your bulletins, you noticed that we are observing Martin Luther King Jr. Sunday today. And you might be wondering, why on earth are we doing that? Because King's birthday is not until next week. And next Sunday would be the closest one to his birthday. The reason is that we are launching a six-week sexuality series beginning next Sunday. And so for reasons of scheduling, we decided to do Martin Luther King Sunday today. Each of us here this morning knows what it's like to be afraid. I have a friend who has an unusual and chronic disease that is notoriously difficult to treat. In a desperate search for better health, he has traveled to several cities to consult with specialists in big name medical centers. After doing a number of these visits, one specialist finally said to him, "Yes, I know what this disease is. I have seen it before, and I know how to treat this, but you are not going to like the treatment. This treatment is going to take a long time. Before you get better, you're going to feel a lot worse than you already do. The treatment is going to exhaust you. Quite frankly, you should know that the treatment is so bad that about half the people I treat decide to stop midway. Some people just don't make it. You are going to need all of the courage and hope you can muster." My friend wants to feel better in the long run, so he is going to accept this treatment. But in the short run, he is afraid of what's going to happen to him. Fear has many sources. We could be afraid that the economy will falter, afraid we'll lose our job, afraid we will fail in our line of work, afraid that dreadful things might happen to our children, afraid of dying young, afraid of violence, afraid of what other people might do to us. Coretta Scott King, the wife of Martin Luther King Jr., published a memoir in 1969, just after her husband was assassinated. In this memoir, she describes the fear that she and other black people experienced in the American South from the 1930s to the 1960s. One story Coretta tells from her childhood in rural Alabama is that of her father, Obadiah Scott, who by honesty, hard work, and extreme patience managed to earn a livable income in spite of repression and threats from white people. At one point, her father owned a pickup truck. It was secondhand, of course, but a pickup truck which he used to deliver lumber to other people, and he would charge a small fee for the delivery. His delivery business became successful enough that some poor white people saw him as a threat. So sometimes groups of whites would stop her father on lonely roads, curse him, and threaten to kill him. This was not an idle death threat because whites had earlier lynched one of Coretta's great uncles. They hung him up by his neck from a tree and then shot his body with bullets. Despite the threats, Coretta's father was not murdered, even though later on resentful whites burned down another of her father's business ventures, this one a sawmill, which he had hoped would give his family steady income. After telling these stories, Coretta writes that, quote, "I learned very early in life to live with fear for the people I loved. As a black person, one could never predict when white people might threaten you, injure you, fine you, charge you exorbitant and unreasonable interest rates, jail you, or lynch you." Coretta's fears increased in the 1950s after she married Martin Luther King Jr. and the civil rights movement began. During the years when they lived in Birmingham, Alabama, and Martin was pastor of the Dexter Avenue Baptist Church, they received numerous death threats by anonymous callers on the telephone. Nasty letters were mailed to their house. Their house was even bombed one night when whites tried to use the power of fear to stop the Kings from their leadership role in the civil rights movement. Fear became their constant companion. The 43rd chapter of Isaiah, which Corey read part of for us, speaks to the fears that hinder us. In verse 1 and again in verse 5, God says, "Do not fear, for I have redeemed you. Do not fear, for I am with you." These words were originally spoken to Jews living somewhere in the Babylonian Empire around the year 540 BCE. By this point in history, the Jewish people were scattered across the face of the ancient Near East, with some of them living in Babylon, some of them down in Palestine, and then an unknown number living in areas of the former Assyrian Empire, which by this time had fallen apart due to the dominance of the Babylonians. We may imagine that these Jewish people were afraid of what would happen to the future, what would happen to them in the future. Would they survive as a people? They have no temple anymore. They have no king to pull them together. They're scattered all over the place. Was history going to sweep them into oblivion? And if they did survive, how unpleasant would the Babylonians make their lives? How would their faith in Yahweh overcome the trauma of the exile? They didn't know the answers to these questions, and that very uncertainty was a big part of why they were afraid. We're usually most afraid of the things we don't know. Right? The things that might happen, but we're not sure about. Into that context, God spoke assurance. I, God, created you. I love you. I am going to bring you back. You're scattered across the face of the ancient Near East, but so what? I can pull you back together again. I will save you. I call you by name. You are mine. I will ransom you. You are precious to me. I am with you. You don't have to be afraid. Be at peace. During the civil rights movement, God spoke similar words of assurance to Martin Luther and Coretta Scott King. We can do no better at this point than to hear Coretta tell this story in her own words from her memoir. First, she describes how God's assurance came to Martin, her husband, and then a couple of days later, how it came to her. So I'm going to read now passages from her memoir. For my husband, Martin Luther King Jr., prayer was a daily source of courage and strength that gave him the ability to carry on even in the darkest hours of our struggle. I remember one very difficult day when he came home bone weary from the stress that came with his leadership of the Montgomery bus boycott. In the middle of that night, he was awakened by a threatening and abusive phone call, one of many that we received throughout the movement. On this particular occasion, however, Martin had had enough. After the call, he got up from bed and made himself some coffee. He began to worry about his family, and all of the burdens that came with our movement weighed heavily on his soul. With his head in his hands, Martin bowed over the kitchen table and prayed aloud to God. Lord, I am taking a stand for what I believe is right. The people are looking to me for leadership. And if I stand before them without strength and courage, they will falter. I am at the end of my powers. I have nothing left. I have come to the point where I can't do this by myself. Later he told me, at that moment, I experienced the presence of the divine as I have never experienced him before. It seemed as though I could hear a voice saying, "Stand up for righteousness. Stand up for truth. And God will be on our side forever." When Martin stood up from the table, he was imbued with a new sense of confidence. He was ready to face anything. I believe that this prayer was a crucial turning point for the African-American freedom struggle, because from that point forward, we had a leader who was divinely inspired and could not be turned back by threats or any form of violence. A few nights after Martin's moment of truth, I had mine. I was sitting in my living room in Montgomery, chatting with a friend, while my new baby daughter, Yolanda, was in the back room. Suddenly, we heard a loud thump on the front porch. Because of all the recent threats, I urged my friend to get up immediately and move to the back of the house. "It sounds," I said, "as if someone has hit the house with a bomb. We better move." As we moved toward the back, we felt a thunderous blast, followed by shattering glass and billowing smoke. I hurried to Yolanda's room and thanked the Lord she was okay. I called the church where my husband was speaking, but he was addressing the audience at that time. He called me back shortly afterward as a large crowd gathered at our house outside. And then he rushed home. The crowd was angry at what had happened, and there was a lot of tension between the police and those who had gathered, some of whom were armed with guns, rocks, and bottles. In the middle of all of the turmoil, I said a silent prayer for the protection of our family and the restoration of peace. Then Martin began to speak to the crowd from the front porch of our house. "My wife and baby are okay," he said. "I want you to go home now and put down your weapons. We cannot solve this problem through retaliatory violence. We must meet violence with nonviolence." As Martin continued to speak, I was enveloped by a growing calm. "God is with us," I thought. "God is truly with us." The fear and anger around me began to melt like the receding snows of spring. Almost at that moment, Martin concluded his remarks to the crowd. "Remember, if I am stopped, this movement will not stop. Because God is with this movement. Go home with this glowing faith and this radiant assurance." Martin's speech on that day was yet another crucial turning point for our freedom struggle, because it set the tone for nonviolence that gave our movement its unique credibility and enabled all of the victories that we achieved under his leadership. From that day on, I was fully prepared for my role as Martin's wife and partner in this struggle. There would be many more days of difficulty and worry, and there would be many more prayers. But the unwavering belief that we were doing God's work became a daily source of faith and courage that undergirded our freedom movement. That's the end of Coretta's words. To a fearful Jewish people trying to survive the Babylonian Empire, God spoke words of assurance. To Coretta Scott King and Martin Luther King, engaged in the mission of liberation, God spoke words of assurance. To us and our fears, God also speaks words of assurance. So I leave you this morning with three questions that you may ponder in the coming week. Number one, what are you afraid of? What are you most afraid of? Two, how are you praying about this fear? Remember, Coretta and Martin prayed through their fears. So how are you doing that? Three, what is God doing to redeem you from your fear? What is God doing to give you courage and hope?